Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It, your voice for wellness, and let's just jump right in. You know, it's kind of an interesting show because we're going to take you on an interesting virtual tour today. And it's an important virtual tour because for those of us who are raising children in the community, you know, one of the things we want, I think, as parents pretty consistently, is for our kids to really go as far as they can in terms of who they're going to become and how safe they're going to be and their economic potential and, you know, all those kind of little odd things parents want for their kids. And so we have to look at the dark side. We have to tour the corrective nature of society today and kind of get a chance to look at a peek under the hood, if you will, of juvenile justice. So we're joined today by
Gordon
Goodman. It's like G names flowing through my head here. Gordon Goodman, he is the deputy district attorney.
Hey, that's why I'm here.
You are essential to the show. Gordon, morning.
Good morning.
We're going to take a walk through juvenile justice.
Oh, that's
are
good.
We not?
Hopefully. Hopefully we will tiptoe good. Through it.
337-8874 today if we, you know, stumble on our walk or miss one of the dusty hallways that you want to ask about. You know, call us up, give us...
Or parents have any questions.
Absolutely.
This is their opportunity to call.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well...
You don't look evil and scary, by the way.
I'm not evil and scary. You know, that's a funny misconception. I get into court, I get to play a role. I play the role...
Like almost Santa Claus-ish a little
angry
bit.
Angry father. The angry father. I get to claim that parents aren't doing what they're supposed to and kids need to be dealt with in some way other than they're used to. And these are uncomfortable things for parents and for kids. But everyone loses the real concept of what I'm doing, which is trying to help all of these minors. I get to help the people I'm prosecuting. In other parts of our job, you don't always get to help the people you're prosecuting. But I get to do that, and I take that seriously. I want the best result. I want to end up with a girl or a boy turning into a woman or a man, not in prison, not in jail, not with any serious problems that keep them from having a decent life. And the way I do that is by going ahead with prosecutions when the facts are there and the situation warrants and trying to get some help through the legal system.
So in a weird way, you actually have the same kind of parental care for this community, for its children, that each of us as parents has for our kids.
Well, I do, and so does the court, and I'm trying to help the court carry out that role. The court stands in the place of parents when a wardship is declared. That's what a conviction for a juvenile is, really a jurisdictional finding, these terms that we use, and they become a ward of the court, even though they stay with their parents if they're on probation. And
it's too different. I mean, it's a juvenile court and the adults, you know, it's so much different because with the juveniles, you know, you're trying to do something that will help them in the future. And sometimes with the adults, sometimes it's already too late. Not too late. I hope not. I
mean, recidivism could start at any age, I suppose.
You know, how many people in state prison, you know, come out, and it's very few. You know, I have many people who have gone to prison or federal, and because they did this mistake. And it's taken so many years to get just a decent job once they get out.
And kids that come into your system initially run that risk, I suppose.
They do.
Some of those people...
And we're trying to prevent that.
We're trying to. Some come in. We get referrals of kids as young as 9 or 10 years old. And, you know, there are factors in the law that really make it unjust to proceed against someone that young.
Referrals then come from law enforcement? Yes, no, maybe
all,
so.
All from law enforcement. Okay. We only prosecute cases where someone is alleged to have committed a crime. Other issues get taken care of through Child Protective Services and Dependency Court, but we only deal when a crime has been committed.
Okay.
In most people's common sense approach, they believe that what we're doing is punishing children when they commit offenses, and the California system is different from most states and not quite unique, but we deal with rehabilitation as pretty much the only option. We don't punish juveniles. it feels like punishment because they get put into juvenile hall if they get arrested, and then maybe if things don't work out at home and they need a therapeutic setting, mm-hmm. they get sent to group homes. And you hear kids saying, I've done my time when they come back from the group home, but they haven't done any time at all. I mean, in fact, legally it doesn't count as doing time because they're getting treatment such as it is. Mm-hmm. I know there's an opinion as to that. Mm-hmm. But they're getting treatment, not being punished. And so when victims come in and say, I want you to punish those kids for tagging my wall, we have to tell them we can't punish them for that at all. That's not what we do. Mm. We'll try to get them help so they stop doing it. And that's what we're after. So you wanted to know what happens from the beginning.
Yeah. Walk us through. This will be interesting.
Let's give you an
example. Well, how many, like, for example, you know, how many arrests or how many felonies until, you know, they get sent to group homes or what's...
Well, it doesn't work that way.
But, you know, or like if somebody robs or the worst, trying to commit a murder, how do you prosecute that and how... Let's start with the general.
This is an odd field of law for a prosecutor because we do not have control of the cases to begin with. We don't even see most of the cases.
Whereas with adults, you...
With adults, all cases come to us and we decide whether to charge them. All misdemeanors and felonies.
Yes.
But all cases for a juvenile go to probation. And they do their intake function, which means they research the kid's background and they look at the parents and they look at the situation. And quite frequently for a first offense of a misdemeanor sort, they will do what's called counsel and dismiss, which is basically shaking their finger at the minor saying, don't do this, it's bad, do you understand, and send them on their way, and it's gone.
I just want to, for the record, point out that typically kids who've gotten in enough trouble for that intervention to occur have had adults in their past, maybe at age 3, maybe like constantly from age 3, wagging the finger in the face and saying, don't do that again. Is that a fairly successful intervention at that point? Or I suppose it is for some kids. But
you'll have to ask probation because I don't see those
kids
at all.
Yeah.
Now, if they've had a contact or two or it's more serious.
The seventh finger wag.
Well, or
the ten.
Or it's something like, you know, beating up another kid and hurting him. Where it's serious, then the probation department will refer it to me. Or they'll do what's called an informal probation. Again, I don't see mm-hmm. it. And the minor, we call them minors, that's our term, mm-hmm. not juveniles or kids. The minor is on probation for 6 months without us even knowing about it. The court doesn't know about it.
So we have this sub-legal system shadow
legal
system almost.
In other words, probation takes care of all the informal until then, like you said, a crime
more serious. They are the determiners of when that crosses over, evidently.
Absolutely. It's their decision, it's their judgment, and their discretion. Sometimes we will get the case after the minor's been put on that informal probation and they have acted out.
It hasn't mm-hmm. worked.
Hasn't worked. And then we will proceed with our normal practice of procedures, charging and going to court.
When they come to you, what kind of crimes or serious crimes have they committed? To give us an idea of what we're dealing here in the Valley.
Well, we don't really deal with mm-hmm. necessarily minors based on how serious the offense is. Mm-hmm. We deal more with what the minor needs. I've actually had a 12500A license violation.
Help me.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you, this is lawyerese.
What is that?
That's a driving without a valid license.
Oh.
It's a six-month misdemeanor, although it doesn't seem like it because we handle them less formally even for adults. But I've actually proceeded on that because the minor needed intervention, and we've had a minor go to placement mm-hmm. because they didn't have a valid license when they were driving because everything else in their life needed assistance with it. And so it has more to do with the minor family setting needs, what kind of help they need, than with the offense. Now, having said that, I see everything from tagging, fights at school where I can tell one person was the aggressor. What else is minor? Petty thefts, all the way up to murder. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes we charge the murders if the minors old enough. And I haven't had very many of those. One,
knock on wood.
One
yeah.
in 4 years.
Oh, good. I hope we don't get any more.
We can decide to charge them directly in adult court and bypass the juvenile system altogether.
Because of the severity of the crime.
Right. Or we don't think that they can be helped by the time they turn 25, mm-hmm. which is the maximum. And the state's trying to close up the juvenile prison, which they call DJF now, Department mm-hmm. of Juvenile Facilities, entirely, so we don't have nowhere to send them, relying on the county to do all that, which we don't have the resources for. So sometimes we try, as a prosecutor, to push the older juveniles into the adult system because I don't see how we can help them on serious offenses. Mm-hmm. And that's a sad thing because if we had more resources, we could do something else with it.
337-8874 is the phone number. Who are Gordon Goodman? He's the deputy district attorney
yes.
for the County of Imperial. And we're talking juvenile justice related stuff here. You know, compared to other counties, I mean, you must hang out with your Southern California deputy district attorneys at some
conferences or meetings
or something. Environmentally, what is it like here versus other counties? Are there stuff that we have to watch out for as parents? Is do you, from your end of it, see potential hazards that we need to be aware of?
Or are we still kind of not protected, but, you know, just
insulated,
from
whatever.
Compared to the big cities, bigger cities?
Well, we're not really insulated. We have some gang issues in this county. And mm-hmm. one of the biggest problems, tagging, for example, which is a minor part of gang activity.
Not like tag your it, huh?
No, it's like drawing things on walls with permanent substances.
I know.
Ruining them. Part of that has to do with the parents not paying any attention to where their kids are. I have to say, if they knew where they were and they knew what they were doing, they probably would stop them from riding on someone else's fence with paint or a marker or whatever they're using. And that's true for most of the gang activity. Parents get busy. They have other things that they're involved in. Maybe they're lost in their own problems. They aren't supervising their children. Children get caught up in the gang activity, and there we are with a lot of crimes getting committed based on that.
Well, there's got to be some sort of certain bonus level to that because, I mean, if you think about parents and kids and kids, you know, junior high age and above, they're going to be able to grab some time because our lives aren't that intertwined anymore. And there's some accountability at the end of the day, but something's got to differentiate the kids who are going out and doing things that society doesn't really want you to do versus the kids who have that same opportunity. I think every kid's got that opportunity who don't do things like that.
Well, you would think that, but mm-hmm. my experience runs counter to that. I'll give you an example. We have a serious problem along the border with juveniles between the ages of 14 and 18, most of them about 17, mm-hmm. being recruited to carry amounts of drugs across the border.
Mm,
we have
true.
About 50 to 60 cases a year of that. Some of them are recruited out of the Calexico High School. Almost every one of them has no prior record. They have no other contacts with probation. They are doing fairly well in school.
Those would be the desirable people to have do this, right, because they'd come up.
That's right. Yeah. Nothing's going to happen to you because you're a juvenile. Take these drugs.
Yeah, and you've been a nothing else. No priors, or like you said.
No.
Recently, we've had heroin brought across in a fairly large body carrier amount, methamphetamine also, and it's scary that these kids that are otherwise off our screen entirely mm-hmm. show up doing something so dangerous because the people they're dealing with are part of that vicious, cruel, angry thing that's happening.
Well,
and seductive at the same
yes,
time.
Yes, and the thing is, the thing
know,
is, you know, we have, you know, an alcohol and drug, under behavioral health, we have alcohol and drug programs and for the kids. And I know a lot of kids, minors, that have done that, and also young adults, you know, just young adults. And both of them, you know, both of these kids that I know are, like you said, no priors. And, you know, unfortunately for the one that was the adult, had a job and everything, but needed, wasn't hurting for money. And just this once, it was the first time, got caught, and now this young girl's life is, you know, now she has a felony. Federal.
Well, and almost federal offenses, you can do 10 years for some of these crimes, and you can do a lot of time on your first offense. It's not like state court. You go into state court as an adult, you can hope to get probation on very many charges, but you know, there's time in federal court, and these are federal crimes treated as that coming across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Shall I give you the overview of start to finish of procedures?
Yeah, let's do that.
So the first thing that happens is someone gets caught. They may be arrested or they may not. They get taken to probation. Probation, you know, to the juvenile hall, they may hold them or they may not. If they don't hold them, then the probation officer does their intake thing, and if they want me to charge something, they give me the police report and the information relating to the minor. I make a decision whether I can prove it beyond a reasonable doubt.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't feel I can prove it beyond reasonable doubt, I don't charge it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't charge it saying, well, they'll plead to something.
Do you get any, at that point, like any additional resources? Do you send your CSI people out to shine fluorescent lights on things? And
probably on the TV, okay.
I have no CSI resources. I don't even really have an investigator to help me. Sometimes the...
maybe the probation officers are probably the investigators.
Well, they don't investigate the crime itself.
Mm-hmm.
I'll send some cases back saying, here's a problem, can you talk to the victim or can you find out more about what happened? And the police agencies will do some more and then send it back, and then I'll make a final decision whether to proceed or not. If I decide to proceed, then I have my clerk at the office prepare a petition. We give it back to probation. They give 10 days notice to the minor to get him into the court, and then we have what's called a detention hearing. If they're arrested, we only have 48 hours to do all that.
Wow.
We have 48 hours.
Is that
the limit?
That's juveniles, right?
Well, adults have 48 hours also.
Okay, so it's a blanket law.
It's to keep people from being held too long before some decision is made.
Okay.
On a weekend, that doesn't count, and so they could be in from Friday until Tuesday without any decision being made at all and then let go. So they're trying to keep it that short or shorter. So we don't have people sitting around languishing.
So for the kids, if there's anybody, don't get in trouble. First of all, don't get in trouble, especially don't get in trouble on a Friday.
We go into court. The first hearing is called a detention hearing. From the word detain, you know, are we going to hold on to this minor? Are we going to send the minor home with parents? Court will make that decision at that time. The two dates are set. If they're in custody, there will be a trial date called a jurisdictional hearing set within 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Not like the adult system. 3 weeks. And we have to go within 3 weeks unless something slows down the case. And for the great majority of the cases, they don't slow down.
No, because your investigation stuff's all done, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, and the minor's in custody. We want to move it. We don't want to keep kids in the juvenile hall.
Missing
any longer
school,
than we have to.
Mm-hmm. Et cetera, et cetera.
And they have to be in there for a certain length of time before they get enough schooling to make up the difference. I think it's more than 30 days. I don't really know that.
Right, and there may be some qualitative differences between the
and there is
school and juvenile hall. And
well,
certainly the experience.
Yeah, experience, yeah. Yes. But there is a school in juvenile hall. So.
There is.
Right, but there's not a chemistry teacher.
No.
So we have that. And then we'll have a date set before that for negotiation between the attorney for the minor and the attorney, and me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm it. Except for those drug cases across the border. The U.S. attorney helps us cross-designated with those because he has access to the resources, the Border Patrol and Customs, in a way that we don't.
Mm-hmm. Are most of the juvenile attorneys court-appointed in our community? And it seems like with our resources here, that would be the case. Is that true?
Most cases are handled by the public defender.
Yeah, okay.
And Heather Cutlip is the public defender mm-hmm. assigned to juvenile cases.
She must be busy.
She is really busy.
We're actually having her on next week to refute your testimony.
No, we're having somebody else.
We agree on quite a bit, but not often in court. There are a couple of attorneys, Ron Cerna and Jason Amavisca, who have a contract, and they are the next ones appointed. And then there's a list of attorneys when we have conflicts, which means an attorney can't represent someone because they represent someone else involved. Then there's a list of attorneys where we have resources to appoint. Almost all of the cases involved appointing counsel. Part of the reason is if you had a parent who said, I have the money, but I'm just not getting them an attorney, the minor still has a right to be defended. And so that doesn't happen very often, but
I hope not.
And we do have a few that are able to hire an attorney for their son or daughter, but it doesn't happen all that often. We go into court, we negotiate, always with an eye for what is best for the minor, although we disagree on that between us sometimes, not all the time, and come up with a resolution in almost every case. And the next step is the minor admits. Now, if the minor doesn't admit to something through negotiation, then the minor has to go to the trial, which is the jurisdictional hearing. And at that hearing, I have to put on evidence sufficient to convince the judge, no jury, the judge, that the minor committed the crime beyond a reasonable doubt. And we do those. That's
so in, part of what we do. And so in juvenile, there's no jury?
No jury.
Okay.
And then 2 weeks later, if they're in custody, there's what's called the disposition hearing, which is similar to a sentencing.
Mm-hmm.
But since there are no convictions, legally no convictions in
there's only an admission.
There's a finding, a jurisdictional finding that the minor comes under the jurisdiction of the court. And at the disposition, the court can decide to give the minor, again, informal probation, or give the minor probation without wardship, meaning no stigma attaches from being found a ward of the court, but you're on probation for 6 months so we can see how you do, or to find the minor a ward, in which case they have to come back, they have to do well and come back after they're adults and get it closed, get the case sealed. There's another alternative that happens just to complicate everything. Before the jurisdictional hearing, the minor in felonies, if they're 14 or over, can choose to admit and go on what's called deferred entry of judgment, which is another form of probation. And at the end of that probation, if they're successful, the reward is they are allowed to withdraw their admission, and it's as if they didn't ever admit it at all. There's no wardship. There's no jurisdictional finding. It doesn't really exist for that legal purpose.
Mm-hmm.
How it affects their later life if they want a security clearance, I can't tell you. But it's, you know, it's pretty much taken care of.
And I think that's why
better way.
That's why kids need to know. You know, even though a lot of says, "Well, I'm a juvenile." You know, whatever happens now, you know, it's going to be blanked out when I turn 18. But when you said, you know, if they ever want to go into customs or a federal job, it might.
It may be an issue. All right, top of the hour, we have to take a short break. This is Let's Talk About It. We're sponsored by Imperial County Behavioral Health. We'll take a break. We'll be right back with more show.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It, presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services, each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM Radio Bilingue.
Welcome back. You're listening to Smooth Jazz Sounds of KUBO 88.9. I'm sorry. This is Let's Talk About It, your voice for wellness. I'm Scott. Maria's disappeared. But, yeah, she had stuff to do. So we're going to hang up. We're going to close down the show. We're going to have a great time. 337-8874 is the phone number. We've got, you know, a rare opportunity to talk to the deputy district attorney associated with all the juvenile cases. So, you know, you don't really get the expert in the room that often. This guy is the expert. So we're here with Gordon Goodman. And so you're an attorney, right? So you've got you passed your bar exam.
A long time ago. I've been doing this 30 years.
Are you a local guy? Are you an import?
Import, but I grew up in Pacific Beach in San Diego, so Southern California.
Yeah.
And in between, I practice here.
They have attorney microbreweries in Pacific Beach, actually.
Yeah, they do. I had to leave. There were too many. And they were in the microbreweries.
How long have you been around?
Around here?
Yeah.
I've been with the DA's office for 8 years.
Nice.
And I was here back in the mid-80s with the public defender's office, too. So I've traveled around.
I thought I recognized the feathered haircut.
You like that, huh?
Nice. Well, and you know, it's nice because it's like, who are the people in your neighborhood? And it's interesting to see professionals and people who, I mean, you have such an important role in the community because ultimately you are the society's extra dad for all these kids that may need that extra dad to get out of their childhood safely and to get out of their childhood without the kind of stigma and without the kind of habits that lead to A, non-productive lives, but B, lives that cost end up costing taxpayers tons of money.
Well, that's the point, is to try to help these minors get to be adults that don't commit crimes and have a reasonable life. That's the goal.
Sure, absolutely. So, well, on behalf of the community, we'd like to say thank you for holding up your part of the bargain here.
Now, back where we were, we had been talking about the procedures, and we had gotten to the dispositional hearing where the court decides what steps to take to help the minor.
Yes.
And usually a minor will go home on probation. They'll have terms of probation, and as our court likes to describe it, they're only asked to do the things kids are normally asked to do, not be out after a certain time, go to school, behave.
So it's a reset on your basic programming rules for kids.
Right. That's exactly what it is.
Now, you say most kids end up going home with these kind of probation contracts. Is that like 70%, 80%?
Oh, it's extremely high.
Okay.
We hardly ever send any minors anywhere other than home on a first time through the system.
Well, it's more cost effective, too, one would suspect.
Well, it is, but it's also what's best for the minors.
Yes.
Home is where they belong if they can stay there. And it's where they're likely to get the best help, especially if the parents are committed to helping them. And we have a lot of parents who are very committed to helping their children.
Is when you get to that point and these kids are sent home and their parents are either committed or not, is it commitment versus, I mean, there's some management issues if you're a parent because it's already kind of gone astray and there may be some bad habits in place. As a parent, you might have some limitations in terms of how much management you can do, either because of your own lifestyle choices or you know, just whatever's going on.
And that's the challenge for probation. Probation officers have to deal with that. They're trained to do that, and they have experience, and they do it very well. Sometimes you have a minor who will not cooperate. When they don't cooperate, especially for me, the hottest button is they leave home and disappear for 2 or 3 days or a week or a month or 5 months. That's very scary from my point of view because they're in danger.
Right.
And they could be causing other people to be in danger or out committing crimes, maybe to survive. But if they continue to act up, the probation officer, using his or her discretion, may file a petition to revoke the probation. If they've done something bad enough, they are arrested and they go through that 2 days it has to be filed. Situation.
So they go back right into the whole chain of
right,
process
back
again.
In. Otherwise, they get 10 days notice and come in on their own. And the court again decides whether to hold them or to let them out. And we set those same kinds of dates 3 weeks away for the hearing, sooner for a pretrial. And the minor can choose to fight it or can choose to admit a violation of probation. That can go on several times, depending on what the violation is. It could be something as simple as not going to school 4 or 5 times.
Sure, which is violatable.
Smoking some marijuana or relapsing into other drug use or other things where the court can say, we can still deal with this outside of taking any other steps because probation's on top of it and they feel that they can deal with this minor. So we're sending you home again. Let's try again. Let's make sure this works.
Well, it's interesting because it's, you know, I work in the people change business, right? So we struggle with change in all sorts of different levels, whether it's mental health recovery or substance use stuff or anything. And what I'm wondering is when these kids go home with this list of thou shalt, and as you suggest, the typical thou shalt, you know, stay home, thou shalt not steal things, thou shalt not use drugs, et cetera. You know, those are all the rules we have for all of our kids, basically. But these are people who've already established perhaps some habits and maybe habitually getting high, for example, or maybe habitually running with the pack or whatever, habitually telling their parents no. Do we expect them to go cold sober, cold turkey stuff, or is it typical to expect kind of this gradual dial down or good faith efforts towards a goal? How does that play out?
In many cases where I see a violation of probation, there have been several contacts before that probation violation is filed in court, where the probation officer has tried to get the minor to change, to follow the rules, to keep up on it. And I don't usually see the revocations until probation has not been able to affect enough of a change.
So by the time you see it, you've seen some systemic attempts to intervene to not let it get back to that level.
Yes. Okay. The only other thing that brings them back to me before that happens, usually, is another offense. And another offense, we're dealing with it as something new, and they're also on probation. And then we deal with it when we get to the end of dealing with the new offense, you know, finding out if they're guilty. The court's going to find them guilty. And the court has to decide at that point what to do. Now, after multiple offenses or after a demonstration that the minor's not going to cooperate, the probation department starts looking at the option of recommending placing them in a group home. It's the only other option we have in this county is a group home. It's a therapeutic setting, it's treatment, it's getting the minor out of the home setting, setting strict rules and tight supervision. A lot of minors do well with that.
So. And surrounding them with like-minded peers.
Well, except that's not always a good thing. Sometimes it's a very bad thing. Gang issues will follow some minors into placement, especially if they start out by declaring their gang membership right at the beginning, and then they have problems.
Well, or you know, just going back to teen identity. You know, you're always trying to, when you're a teenager, you know, you're kind of insecure about who you are. I'm not, you know, teens, I'm not thrashing out here. This is pretty much the way it is. You're trying to establish your value as a person, you know, because that's developmentally what you're doing there. And so if you've got mad skills on getting high, or stealing things, or whatever. And you end up in this group home, and you walk into the door, and there's kind of this, well, how do I establish myself here? Well, you're going to demonstrate your skills and share them with the group just as a developmental way of expressing who you are. And so the other kid in the room is going to get trained.
Yeah.
And that gets kind of scary.
Well, they try to prevent that from happening too
sure,
much, but
yeah.
There is the
well,
chance
and
that
the cost
happen.
As much as anything else.
Well, the cost, you know, the cost is shared by other governmental agencies for these things, for the most part.
And who funds those governmental agencies? Me.
Yes, all of us.
Yes, exactly.
Group homes cost, the last I've heard, somewhere between $6,000 and $8,000 a month
per minor. Yeah.
And so we're all thinking about that. We don't like to send someone to a group home unless they really need it. But there are times where being at home is not going to do them any good. And one of my responsibilities is to try everything I can to keep a minor from ending up over in the adult court as an adult, maybe facing prison. And sadly, I see them from time to time. I see
sure,
their names and
sure.
hear that they're over there.
And if you think about, you know, an investment of $6,000 a month for several months as compared to a lifetime of being incarcerated and being in all sorts of legal systems and costing all sorts of people all sorts of money, you know, it's a good payoff.
Right.
Now, if it can be managed successfully, that's, I suppose, the trick for everyone.
Now, the other interesting thing about what I do, that kind of is the gamut. We have no other place at this point to send them. I mean, we can hold them in
where
the detention
facility.
Where would
you like to send, if you could, where would you like to send them?
I'd like to have the option, as big counties do, because their resources are greater.
Sure, yeah.
And they're dealing, you know, with percentages and economies of scale. I'd like to have the option of recommending to the court that a minor go to a camp, a facility where they can be kept from running away, because some of the juveniles get it in their heads that they can continue to run away from placement until they're 18 or 20 and
run the
never
clock
have
up.
To go.
Run the clock up, basically.
Right.
Huh?
And every time they run, if they're likely to be in danger, or be out on their own. Frequently, they tell their parents where they are and don't ever go home. And they're 16, 17 years old, 15, out running around somewhere, not
having
even close to home.
Having to survive, having to maybe prostitute themselves, being exposed to drugs and unsavory characters that would harbor these kids, et cetera, et cetera.
Right, and that's a scary thought. We send them back. We send them back to placements. We find a new placement. We get to the point where no state placement will take them, and then we have places out of state.
So the trick to, excuse me, a light bulb just went on my head. The trick to placement, then, is getting a placement and getting an arrangement with a placement that a kid buys into.
Absolutely. And we have that situation. It's not always the place itself. It's the interaction between the minor and the group home. We have some group homes where a higher percentage can be reached, and I don't know why that works. The probation department knows about these things, and
sure.
they follow it and keep
sure.
track. But we have these young men and women come back, after being there for 6 months. We've had some as short as 6 months. They just got into the program and just took it over and adopted it. And we've had some come back in a year, year and a half, and they look different. They're dressed different. Their attitude's different. They almost always say, when they're successful, thank you for sending me there. I really needed it. I understand why I needed it. And now I'm doing great. I've got my diploma. I'm going to go to college. You know, most of them follow through. Some have trouble after that. The big problem we have is when they come back from placement, to keep them from falling back into their old habits, which they'll try to do if they're, you know, with their old pals and that sort of thing.
Now, generally speaking, the kids who end up getting involved in the juvenile system, are these kids basically failure to thrive socially anyway? I mean, are they struggling in school? Have they had trouble following rules consistently? It seems like with all the exit gates that you have along this pathway you described, that kids who are functioning reasonably well are going to be allowed to kind of, you know, just straighten up and keep going, so that ultimately you're distilling basically to the time that the kids get into your system, when they've actually, the probation is now recommending this jurisdiction trial, et cetera, et cetera. These are the kids that are really probably struggling with the tasks of successfully integrating into society. Is that what you find?
For the most part, we occasionally have someone who's committed a crime who has no family to go home to. And they go to placement until they're 18. They're taught to live on their own and the skills they need and given resources at that point to do it. Occasionally, that's rare. Sometimes parents don't want the kids to come back and we have to put them in placement. We try to avoid sending minors to placement.
Right.
I may argue for it at times when parents don't think it's appropriate and the court doesn't think it's appropriate.
Are you able to draw in other needs? I know, for example, with the community I work with, that the majority of people who end up in my clinic for substance abuse issues, for example, and many of them are compelled by legal or other reasons to be there. It's not like they're just walking in the door and, hey, you know, I got this problem. But those people really consistently also have mental health issues. Many of them have very, very chaotic and traumatic lives that they've basically just been surviving with this substance abuse coping mechanism, for example. Conversely, I've got people with mental health conditions, and many of them have come from stressful and chaotic environments too, who end up getting in trouble with the legal system as part of their maybe not thinking things through or being in so much distress that they're just reacting to their environment. I'm sure the same is true for juvenile hall kids or for kids who are in the legal system. How do you draw in the supports if the problem is just beyond somebody's poor choice, if the problem is somebody's, you know, health condition?
Usually those matters are brought to the attention of the court by the defense attorney, because the defense attorney will find out more about the minor than I ever will. I don't have a lot of contact with the minors themselves.
Right.
And frequently there will be a recommendation from probation, even in the cases where the minors just sent home on probation, for seeking and following through with mental health treatment. Minors are often ordered to comply with, for example, the WAS program. And quite frequently, once they're told that it's voluntary.
Acronym alert.
I'm not really sure what it is.
Ward Access to Supportive Services.
Right.
I wouldn't have called it out if I didn't know it. So.
Well, I only hear it as WAS, so I have to live with that.
Ward Access. You know what wards are, so you got that one, to supportive services.
Okay. But the minors will decide they don't need that because it's told to them that it's voluntary, because from the treatment perspective, I understand it needs to be voluntary. And then they don't get any help.
Here's your semantic leap off the cliff here. It is completely voluntary, just as court-mandated substance abuse treatment is also completely voluntary. However, if you choose not to participate, you are now subject to whatever the court's decision is in terms of their stuff. So you're voluntarily participating because you don't want to get in trouble with the court. Hello.
Well, if they won't go at all and they need it, then we have to start looking for a group home that has some treatment along that line. And that's one of the things that we don't have much of, is we don't have much in the way of resources for mental health treatment especially if it's severe,
right.
for the minors
right.
that we want to put in group homes. Those homes are hard to find, and it's hard to get that taken care of, and that's frustrating at times. Some of the resources that we lack, we run into that, and it's really frustrating.
Is there, if you had the ability in the community to kind of cobble together these types of supportive services, whatever they were. I mean, you know, for example, some kids may need a good hobby in the afternoon to do instead of running around painting on things, right? Or they may need vocational opportunities if they're older teenagers. In addition to mental health support, in addition to all this other stuff, if there's a way to cobble that together locally, is that something that intrigues you in terms of a possible intervention for this?
Well, it is, but I'm not really involved in that end of it. You know, once we have orders in place, I'm kind of through with dealing with that. Probation, as far as I can tell, is always looking for options of that sort for the minors, because anything that can be done to help them, and especially if it doesn't cost too much,
yeah.
They would like to employ. They're always looking for a new idea.
Nice.
Now, there's something I wanted to say, because it's important. In the last...
Everything you've said today is important.
Oh, but this is one of the
really important,
nearest and dearest to my heart.
Should we take out our pencils?
Yeah. It'll be easy to remember. In the last, I'd say 4 months, I've had a flood of assault with a deadly weapon cases. And that includes kicking someone on the ground after you've hit them or beat them. So that's assault by means likely to cause great bodily injury. Attacking people with hammers, stabbing people, hitting people with sticks. We've had a sort of gang-related thing. It might be. We don't know where someone was stabbed to death. But we've had a lot of different kinds of cases just recently.
Like a little storm.
A storm of really serious offenses involving hurting people. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going on. I'm hoping that parents will kind of monitor their minors.
Is this a high school age storm or junior high storm, or do you have a kind of a regional flavor to it?
No, most of it is age 16 to 18.
Which are those, you know, traditionally those are the kids who actually have settled down a little bit and are not being senseless anymore.
And it's very strange because some of these are family settings where it's against family members. Some of them are gang related where it looks like, where it's against someone they don't know personally, but is involved in an opposing group.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of them are just very strange. And I don't know why that is right now, but I'm kind of hoping that parents will watch their kids and not accept an explanation like, I need to carry this knife in my pocket, which is a crime, by the way. It's a felony to carry like a steak knife in your pocket because I need to protect myself. If they need that much protection, I'm hoping parents will step forward and protect them and not let them go out and protect themselves, because that's very dangerous.
Well, yeah, and ultimately not true. Protecting yourself by carrying a steak knife in your pocket is, like, probably not very effective.
Well, it happens all the time.
Right. Well, it's an attempt for somebody who's not very experienced in the world to manage themselves in a way that feels safe, and ultimately they don't have a wide range of selections to maturely select from.
Right, and it's kind of deniable. Oh, it's just a knife from home. It's not a big weapon or anything.
I needed to cut my...
That's right.
Biscuit.
That's right. Might run into a piece of carne asada somewhere that I need to cut with that knife.
Now, you know, anytime there's systems that develop around social needs, there's always kind of a match between the size of the social need and the size of the system. How are you guys doing in that regard? Are you now overwhelmed with little rugrats running around with juvenile problems, or do you guys have enough manpower to handle this with all the time frames and all the everything else?
Well, I believe that the district attorney's office has enough resources right now, but I'm not sure probation does. I think they need some help. They're stressed to the limit, I think, as far as covering all their needs for the juveniles. They have caseloads for supervision that are kind of high. Police agencies are having a lot of trouble with graffiti, and they're getting leaned on by the victims who want those kids punished, and they don't like hearing from us that punishment isn't what happens. And, you know, but the police agencies have taken a lot of heat for the graffiti, the sort of increased rash of graffiti in the last year or two. And, you know, really, that comes from home. Graffiti, the cause of graffiti starts at home. It doesn't start with the police or us.
And you're never going to have enough feet on the street or beat or whatever it is, to eliminate a kid waiting until the coast is clear and writing something really quickly on somebody's wall. I mean, this, it's more of a social problem than and not only that. I mean, honestly, I want the police saving my life, okay? And so my property, yeah, that's important, but that's not as important as some other public safety concerns.
Well, it's hard to say because there are a lot of people out there who have spent hundreds of dollars many times
to repair that
damage.
Absolutely.
And they're getting pretty frustrated. And at some point, that becomes a public safety concern.
Yeah, well, there you go. I can see mad as heck and not going to take it anymore. Huh?
Yeah, it could happen. I'd hate to see it happen. It's not the way to handle things. But there is a lot of frustration out there.
Yeah.
And I don't know what we do about that. We deal with it the best we can.
Well, Mr. District Attorney, Deputy District Attorney, it sounds like you've got it under control. It sounds like what you're doing with our kids is really as well-measured and well-intended and judicious and thought out as it can be. And that's really, I guess, reassuring in a way, because it's nice to know that part of the puzzle is in place and that, you know, going forward, we have the kind of cobble it together thing that we can do, but...
There are ways that the court puts together packages of resources, especially for minors with mental issues or drug issues, trying to use wraparound services, which is another technical term that deals with how we bring in these resources from outside. And Judge Ulloa is doing a very good job trying to get those resources brought into what we do and to put packages together when families will take advantage of them. They work out fairly well, but it's a tough thing to get all these resources pulled together from different places.
And
our court's trying
and
very
get
hard.
Families and kids engaged in the process.
Right.
You know, seeing that as an option.
But everyone should think about this. My happiest day in the court, I mean tears in the eyes happy, is seeing one of these young people who comes in from placement or after deferred entry of judgment and says, I'm glad I went through this. I'm doing great. I'm headed towards college. My grades are up, and life is better, because that's what we're after right there.
Oh, absolutely.
And there are other cases that go the other way around where things just turn as bad as possible, and those are very sad.
Yeah.
And we all feel for that. Yeah. We all are frustrated by those cases. We've tried to help, but we like the successes.
Well, you know, for us on the bottom end of it as parents and community people and mental health people and teachers and everybody else, I think we can help you subscribe to a new best case scenario. We're going to try and give you an empty docket. How's that?
I'd love
that. That'd bring tears to your eyes.
Yeah, then I'd have to go do something else. No, don't do that.
Glenn Goodman, Deputy
Gordon.
Gordon Goodman. It's that G name, Gordon Goodman. I mean, you know, Gordon's a rare name in this community. And
it
I
is.
Haven't had to use that since I was in Michigan.
Well, I'm glad to stretch your experiences. You have to use it.
I had a best friend, Gordy, growing up in third grade, and he loved Plymouth Roadrunners. Remember the Plymouth Roadrunners?
Yes.
The Super Bees. He loves Super Bees.
Great cars.
Anyhow, nice. Pleasure this morning. Thanks for coming aboard.
Thank you for having me here.
Listeners, remember, we can catch this on podcast starting early next week. And again, we're sharing with the community. So join us again next week. Let's talk about it. I'm Scott. We're going to have another great show for you. We're having next week, the Drug Policy Alliance is coming to talk about drug policy. So that'll be a good show. Stay tuned.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.